Welcome to An Actor Despairs. I'm your host, Ryan Perez.
Ladies and gentlemen, today on An Actor Despairs, I am so excited to announce that we have Rosalind Chow. We're here to talk about Three Body Prop. Rosalind has had such an amazing career that started when she was young as a child actor doing commercials where she was discovered at her parents' restaurant and has grinded and built a litany of credits on IMDb that you can see for yourself. Things that include The Joy Luck Club, I Am Sam, and so many others. I am so grateful to her for opening up, coming on here, talking about her journey, everything that happened with Three Body Problem, and all the other amazing things that we're able to touch on. She's got a play coming up at Atlantic Theater Company. If you happen to be in New York, I'm certainly going to check it out. Rosalind Chow, I got so much love for you. Here it is. Rosalind Chow, welcome to An Actor Despairs. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. Let me just turn my phone on Do Not Disturb. Okay, very good.
It's so great to have you here. It's incredible to talk to you, and I have so much gratitude for your time. It's really a real honor to get to speak with you because it's so hard, you know, for us actors that are coming up now to carve out pathways that exist for your career. You have such a storied and beautiful career. MASH, I mean, Deep Space Nine, Star Trek. I mean, everything you've done, The OC, St. Elsewhere. It's all, I Am Sam, The Joy Luck Club. There's like, it's amazing. You're like, IMDb should do a story about you and your IMDb, but it's so wonderful. And I'm so excited because it's just such a rich history of both cinema and television. And it's a real honor to get to talk to someone that's worked so proficiently and so incredibly for so long. And we're here to talk about Three Body Problem, which we will speak about spoilers, but you're so incredible in that show and what you do with that character and the buoyancy of, you know, it's such a hard character to play because you part of you loves her and part of you resents what, you know, the implications. And so I'm really excited to get to talk to you. But as my viewers know, I like to start at the beginning, if that's okay.
Oh, okay. Then you have to go way back to before you were born.
Yeah. Yeah. So where did I heard you grew up in Anaheim.
County, and I was found at my parents' restaurant, basically. There's been a lot of kismet in my life, and I definitely acknowledge that so much has been fate and luck and work, you know, like you have to be ready for those opportunities when they come. But as a kid, you know, I guess I just got found and then went to commercial auditions, and my dad did not want my schooling interrupted. So I just did anything, like if something came up and it didn't interfere with school, then I was allowed to do it. And then as an adult, basically, if something didn't interfere with my kids' school or, you know, my life, my real life, then I did it. So they weren't really career choices, all those things that you mentioned.
Yeah.
They were all what fit in with school or what fit in with my kids. There are a lot of things I could have done that are more prestigious. I'll just put it that way. And I hate when actors say, oh, I was offered this or I was offered that, because it doesn't matter because somebody else already did it and flew with it and did a great job. So, but I will say everything has been worked into my life first and then work.
Beautiful. And thank you for sharing that. And is it true that your parents had a pancake house during the day and a Chinese restaurant at night?
Yes. And the pancakes were amazing.
So it was like full on breakfast. And this is in Anaheim, right?
So they did like an IHOP type thing. I think IHOP was around at the same time, but they had like Swedish pancakes. They had pancakes called Manhattan pancakes that were, I have not had these anywhere else. They, you know, like with sour cream and cranberries.
Wow.
And, they had amazing pancakes. It's amazing that for a long time, I couldn't eat pancakes afterwards because I'd just eaten so much of it, but now I love them again.
And it was in proximity to Disneyland, right?
Yeah, it was nearby. Their first restaurant was a tiny hole-in-the-wall place in a shopping center. So they did that, and then they closed that down. and rented the, you know, lot near Disneyland. And then that's where that one, you know, that's where I was kind of raised. I was raised at the little restaurant too, but more at the Disneyland one.
Oh, what a beautiful experience for an upbringing. And then I'm curious for you, you know, obviously.
Oh, really? Oh my God.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, that someone, I wish my parents owned a restaurant. My dads are so, you know, my dad's a cookie cutter doctor and my mom's a teacher. So,
so you got to play outside. You got to do normal kid things.
I wanted to do was be in LA by Disneyland. And I heard you didn't get to go until much later in life.
I never got to go. That's why I hit a tour guide at one point because, you know, I just was dying to be able to go to Disneyland regularly. And now I could, but I can't get my family to go anymore because they're so sick of it because I want to go all the time. I once hijacked my kids. They were, I picked them up from school. They had a short day and they didn't have school the next day. So they thought I was taking them out for lunch. And I turned around and said, "We're not going to lunch."
You're the best mom ever. And
they were like, "Oh, really?"
That's amazing. I'm so curious then. So obviously, were your parents artists or just because of the proximity to Disneyland, an agent came by and ate at the restaurant or?
I think it was a fluke, but my parents were very involved in Peking opera. That was their hobby.
Oh, wow.
So they did have me study kung fu, and you know, when I was doing it, that was kind of my thing. And I used to perform Chinese dance. There's a woman who's kind of the female Bruce Lee, you know, Chen Peipei.
Yeah,
she was in Crouching Tiger. I think she played Jade in Crouching Tiger, and she was in. So she was my Chinese dance kung fu teacher back then. And, you know, and so that was linked up to Peking opera. They would send me to Taiwan in the summertime to learn. So that was kind of my thing when I was growing up. And she even tried to talk me into dropping out of school and going to do kung fu movies with her and a famous kung fu director named King Wu. Anyone who follows those films will know who he is. He used to sit in on my Chinese dance lessons sometimes. And so she tried to talk me into going to Hong Kong to do those films with her. But, you know, I've always been about, I just want to live and then, you know, work. And then I fill up with life. And then I go out and spend, it's like gas. My life is like my gasoline. You know, I have an electric car, but if you would like a gas car, it would be that you fill
You work to live versus living to work.
I do live to work, but I don't think my art, I don't think for me, I don't think it's good unless I live a full life. Let's put it that way.
I really respect you for saying that.
Yeah, my work's empty unless I'm living too. So I have to live and then I go and I work. And when I'm working, I'm so tunnel vision that when that's done, then like I don't even take a shower without thinking about work. And then when I'm done and I, you know, really like to live. I don't know. It sounds weird, but it's
no. Kind of I think I do understand, and I'm curious. Then, you know, obviously, I imagine you were initially auditioning for a lot of commercials as a youth.
Yeah, yeah. As long as it was on my day off, you know. I remember once I had a fever, but I didn't tell my parents because I still wanted to go. Yeah, as long as things didn't interfere, I was allowed to do things here and there. It was spotty, you know? Mm. So I wasn't like a full-on child actor. But it was, I guess the best way to describe it's like some kids do Little League, and this was like my version of Little League.
And do you feel like with, you know, Peking opera and having studied dance, did you enjoy the medium of performing? And I mean, I know commercials are a whole other animal, but did you feel like you it felt at least fun to a degree.
I loved it so much that I kept trying to do other work. You know, I did journalism for a little bit, but it never really registered the way I did love it, but at one point I had to make a choice because back then you weren't allowed to be a member of SAG and be in broadcast journalism. I was able to write stories, but I did a couple interviews and they'd have to cut out my voice because I was in SAG then. So at one point when I was at a CBS affiliate, they were showing a TV movie that I did on screen and I was the lead of the TV movie. It was kind of a big thing. And they showed it on the screen and somebody saw it and said, "I did not know you were doing this. Wait a minute. We have to cut you out of that story you just did. Okay, now you're going to have to decide. Which one do you want to do? Do you want to act or do you want to go into journalism? Because we are paving the way for you. And if you're doing that, then you're doing that. If you're doing this, then you're doing this." And I didn't even need 5 minutes. It was like, "Oh, I'm acting."
Wow. Which,
you know, everybody else was like, "What? You're what? You?" Yeah, because back then, you know, you don't make that much money. And for actors now, I feel bad because, yeah, it's harder. It's harder for you guys now. So you really have to love it. You know, it has to be a no-brainer because you don't get, you know, the residual situation is different. Yeah. Health insurance is different now. So, yeah, you have to love it. And if you love it, you'll do great, you know. Yeah.
Thank you for saying that. And in this moment of having to decide then, and when you did do it, did you really start to kind of dig into, you know, I imagine you're in the West Coast at this point, to acting classes and doing other.
The most important thing, I studied with a brilliant woman who, if not for her, I probably would be like a journalist or something else, maybe something math oriented. I don't know. But she, her name was Peggy Fury. And
awesome name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was amazing. And she has since passed. She passed actually at the end of my studying with her. She helped to choose, well, she did choose my audition scene for, a play I was auditioning for the first time I performed at the Mark Taper Forum, and she chose the play. I went to the audition. I got the part. I started rehearsals and then she passed. So I never even got to come back and say, "Oh my goodness, what a great experience." So
I'm sorry for your loss. I know, you know, it's been some time, but you know,
yeah, but our class had everybody in our class is a box office star except for me.
Are you? You're in Three Body Problem, crushing the world on Netflix on probably every continent on Earth right now. So I think you're doing amazing, and I'm certainly proud of you, even though I'm just meeting you.
Thank you. And
at that time, you know, I imagine I believe MASH was quite a big thing for you, right? You're on the series finale.
Yes, yeah. I didn't know it was a big deal then, but I think that came after. Did that come before or after? That came after Peggy passed, I think. But yeah, I didn't realize what a big deal it was at the time. I never realized anything's a big deal. Even Three Body Problem, people kept saying, this is huge. Oh my God, Roz. And, you know, I didn't watch Game of Thrones. I just knew. I love David and Dan and Alex so much that I'm a little scared to not have them in my life to the degree that they were before. They're the best. They're such great bosses.
I'm excited when we get to that. So to continue.
I'm not aware of how things, whether things are big or not until after they come out. Then I was very aware and got a little freaked out by, you know, press and stuff. It kind of, so I just buried myself, you know, I just went to bed, I think.
Wow. And I imagine at that time, especially, you know, when TV viewership used to have the numbers that it did, you know, I imagine your phone was probably ringing a little bit and you know, maybe getting auditions or?
Well, no, I think people didn't. Well, as far as being recognized, I was never recognized from it because, you know, I looked so different in that than I did in real life. You know, I looked like a Korean immigrant in that. And as far as until I went on Johnny Carson, then I started getting recognized too much. It made me uncomfortable. I was very shy.
You went on a few times on Johnny Carson, didn't you?
Yeah. I can't remember how many times. I think it was like four or five times, but I actually put a stop to it.
Wow.
I was getting more known for being on Johnny Carson than I was for anything else, I felt.
Interesting.
But what a great interviewer. I mean, he was just, you know, you do the pre-interviews. I didn't even have to like stick to that. We could just banter and he was fun. Really.
Made you relax.
Oh.
Yeah.
Probably too relaxed.
Yeah. Well, this is high hopes to live up to. I hope I'm doing okay. But amazing. And I'm curious then as, you know, things started opening up and, you know, television started evolving and, you know, certainly there was procedurals and eventually I know Star Trek started to become a thing for you. What was it like navigating, you know, this cross-genre projects, and was there at ever any point like you wanted to balance, you know, films and television, or was it more really just needing to work and take what came until you could have inadvertently agency to decide what you wanted to do?
Well, that's a good question. It's a longer answer, so stop me if it's too long.
No, please.
You know, I first heard about Star Trek The Next Generation when I was visiting my then boyfriend in London, and I had already, I guess, had an audition for it. I barely even remembered. And then my agent called and said they want to test you for The Next Generation. I was like, that's never going to go. And I remember the agent saying, no, this could be a thing. And I remember saying, no, Star Trek's been done. I'm not flying back for that. I'm having fun here with my boyfriend. So, wow. Okay, hang on. And so I never tested for it. And then later on, they, you know, it was like a rubber ball. They came back and said they had me audition for a recurring role. And at the time I didn't follow Star Trek or anything. So, and then I did it, you know.
Wow.
And it was so much fun. It's really that I'm still friends with them and Colm.
Patrick Stewart, Colm. I mean, it's legendary. I mean, what was it? Talk to me about bringing truth to, you know, sci-fi at that time was, you know, on television. It was such a new thing. And that show is such an icon. You know, now, obviously, there's so many different iterations of things like that. What was it like being an actor on a show like that as it was, you know, before it became the story thing that now people reflect back on?
I didn't realize. Honestly,
wow.
That's right. I'm so – each thing that I've done that's become a thing, I really didn't know it was a thing. I am not – I've not been about career moves at all.
But sometimes that leads to better things, you know, almost in that way.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I thought you were referring to better things. Each thing, I think I've more stood in my own way than I have actually done what somebody else would do planning a career.
Scheming it almost, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think if you just study, I worked really hard in acting class and I can see the things that I did before I studied and the things after. And I think before I studied, that's when I stopped watching myself on screen because I remember being horrified and thinking, well, I got to work harder. And my teacher at the time, Peggy Fury, would have us doing all the classics. Everyone in class would work on the same scene. She had everybody from, I mean,
like theater scenes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, Ibsen. And that grows your you know, Shakespeare, that grows your, and it's, she's from the Lee Strasberg studio.
She oh, was amazing.
Lee Strasberg's, I think, co. So yes, it's all about studying and then career crafting. Probably not. It's not my forte. Let's put it that way. It was very much about what fit into my then love life, then husband life, then kids before that school. You know what I mean? So, yeah, life always came first because my parents were hardworking immigrants and I felt like they never really got a life and I never really got a life as a result. So I was determined to make sure that my kids got, you know, a very, they would probably say it's very Americana upbringing. You know?
Well, that's beautiful. I mean, you're taking them on sneaky Disneyland trips. And I mean, I would kill for my mom to do that. So I'm sure they're so fortunate.
You have a doctor dad.
So yeah, I do. Yeah.
Taken care of.
Yeah, no, that is true. He does help me not need WebMD. But I got you.
You should never tell me you have a link to a doctor.
Yeah.
I am such a, you know, I always want to know what's with this thing? What's with that? Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. It's tough to do on the internet age now, but then, you know, obviously the films like Joy Luck Club and I Am Sam, is it true? Sean Penn was in your acting class?
Yes, he was. He was, he left just as I came in, but he would come back and sit in. Nick Cage was there in the class and she kept pairing me in improvs with him. And that was probably very good for me because I was quite shy. I was so shy. It was actually crazy that I was acting. It really was. It was insane. Wow.
Do you think the class helped open you up in a lot of ways?
The class changed my life. I can see, like, sometimes when I see clips of something I did before I studied with her and stuff that I did afterwards, night and day.
Wow. And so for the actors listening, you do highly suggest, you know, because I think a lot of people, they get a credit and they think they're like, oh, I'm good now. You know,
no, I don't believe that. It's a craft. I mean, there's the odd case, just like there's the odd case of somebody who's a natural musician and they just pick up an instrument, but they still can't read music.
Yeah.
So they can't, you know, maybe adjust the way, you know, when you study, you get all these tools so that if you're given direction, and there's so many outside influence, it's not as much lightning in a bottle. You're able to sort of adapt to circumstances. So I suggest definitely class and theater. I'm going back to theater actually in a month because if I don't, and, you know, career-wise, maybe not smart because
no theaters. Yeah. Are you doing it in London or in America?
I'm doing it in New York.
Oh, I live here in New York.
You do?
Yeah.
I'm gonna do this in person.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do it in a month. Okay, so I know who to call if I get sick.
Yeah, I want to come now. For the audience listening, what are you going to be doing?
At the Atlantic Theater, they just announced it today, so I can announce it. It's a 2-person play with BD Wong and it's called
I love BD Wong. This is amazing.
Yeah. So it's 2-person. And I just told Alex Sharp, who's in Three Body Problem, he was in The Curious Incident and he won a Tony
Award. Yeah.
And I just said to him, oh my God, how can we be on stage so long with and just you alone? He said, you wouldn't want that. I was like, oh, not my favorite. And guess what? This came like maybe a couple weeks later after I
And didn't you do something in London recently?
Yeah, I did a play called The Great Wave. And boy, that was another experience that really changed my life. Wow.
Briefly speak about why, you know, because we live in a time now where I think, you know, actors are so, it's so hard to get work. And there's so many of us that love theater and we have this prerogative to have that live connection with the audience. Cause as I don't need to tell you, you have no control over how they edit, don't edit, you know? And so there's nothing better. And
it's delicious. I mean, it's, you know, here's the thing. doing that play, well, as you're starting as an actor, so most of your audience are actors, right?
Yeah.
So you're basically, I remember somebody telling me this when I was your age, you know, you're building an army. And basically you're trying, when you work with people, you're amassing your, the people who will think of you when a job, you know, comes up, or you're basically building your army, and they will fight for you for certain jobs. And a theater casting director, their American casting director, reached out to me and said, yeah, would you like to audition for this? And so I auditioned for it. And I, you know, it was terrifying at the time because I was going to be with all English actors. I was going to be the only American. I hadn't been on stage in 10 years.
Wow. In an American accent?
No, English accent.
Wow.
And my husband has a wrong English accent. He was with the Royal Shakespeare Company growing up. So his accent is fancy, whereas everyone in this cast had a London accent. So I had to match theirs. So that's scary. And doing something that scares you is really, I mean, I may eat my words after this next one, but doing something that scares you, I think, is really a kind of a good philosophy when it comes to choosing work.
Yeah.
If it's too, you know, puff, you know, you have to do it sometimes for the money or whatever. But if you have a choice and there's an opportunity to do something that you think, oh, I don't think I can do this, then you should do it.
Thank you for saying that.
And
obviously, because I know we do have a limited amount of time, I do want to ask one question, which is going to summarize
actually,
a lot.
You know what? I just got a text, though. We can do the hour if you want.
As long as you have. So, I'm very curious for you then, you know, obviously, because we've seen, you know, in the 90s, you know, obviously, television started to become a thing. And then in 2000s, there was premium television, and then things like The OC and all those shows started to happen. And you've been on so many different amazing programs, both on television and then the films. I'm very curious for you to, you know, because I'm curious mostly specifically how much of this was offers and auditions for the guest stars that you might have done, because
I
a lot of money.
Everything back
you
then.
Did. Wow.
Everything. And now with the Zoom auditions, I don't, because I'm terrible at, I'm really bad at
with Zoom or self-tapes.
For Dan and David, they've for Three Body Problem, they asked me to read something that I didn't know what it was about. And at the time I had so much footage on myself that they could, you know, kind of amass an understanding of what I was doing. And I think Nina Gold and her partner, Robert, had...
Nina cast Three Body Problem?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And Robert, who's amazing. And I think, I can't remember, one of them had seen The Great Wave in London, where I age from 30 to like 70, 80. So that...
Oh, talk about kismet.
So that's why you have to do the work. You just have to work, because you're never sure. That's not why I'm doing this play. The reason why I'm doing this play now is working with BD. The play is so beautifully written. At first I was like, I'll just look and see how it is. And it floored me. It was so beautiful.
Wow.
And then I showed it to somebody else who isn't the child of immigrants. And he was like, oh my God, Roz, you have to do this. So it is when something juicy, delicious comes up, you have to do it, even though, you know, probably it's not smart now because they need me for a lot of, you know, press for Three Body and stuff. And
yeah,
I'm not going to be available, you know, for a lot of stuff, but I need it for it helps my acting. I really feel like my acting goes it just gives, it's like a shot in the arm when I do theater. It's a little bit of, and it's terrifying. It's terrifying. So,
but that's what makes it so thrilling is every night you get to go up there and you get to do it. You don't have to wait a year to 2 years to find out, you know, does this thing work, you know?
Yeah. And three body problem, honestly. So I did three body problem. I was going back.
Yeah. So can we jump into it since it keeps coming up. So how did this originally come your way? Like, yeah, you did the play and then did Nina come or?
I don't know. One of them saw the play, I guess. And I guess that's how it came. I came to mind. I was not available at the time that they first started. I was doing a show called Better Things.
Yeah.
And Pamela Adlon.
Pamela, I love her. She's incredible.
I do. Yeah. She's fantastic. She's so wonderful with actors because she is an actor. But and that was Kismet too. So that's a story for your actors too.
Please tell me. Okay. Yeah. And I'm sorry I'm skipping over credits here. You've done so much. I want to make sure that we have time to talk about that. Yeah.
The Better Things story is good for actors because when I first went in, when I first auditioned, I didn't know what the part was. I just went in and her casting director, Felicity, I didn't know what the part was and I wasn't sure how big it was, but I still went in because I love the show. Didn't get the part. And then they asked me to come in again. And I said, offer only. And then just because it was so, I was a little hurt that I didn't get the other one. And yeah. I read it was such a small, and it was so far away that I had to drive. So then I went. They called me in again, like a year later, really when I got there, they didn't show you the material to get there. It was such a tiny part. I almost left. And casting director said, wait, no, don't leave. Let's talk about it. And so we talked about it. I said, you know, I love the show so much, but so I fought for myself a little bit. I said, I would really rather I'd save myself for a better role. And she said, well, this is maybe the last season or two seasons. She said, I have all the characters. And she went through and she said, no, the only, you know, substantial recurring we have is the part of like her sister-in-law, and she's a Southern lady debutante type person. I said, ugh, well, that doesn't fit. She's from the South. And so I said, all right, I'll read. And I just read for this tiny part. And then I left. And about 3 months later, my agent calls and says, Pamela Adlon wants to talk to you. Is that okay? And I was like, is that okay? Are you kidding me?
And you didn't know her at this point yet.
No, wow. Never okay. Met her. And she called and said, so I've got this part for you. And she said, she was written like a debutante. I'm changing her now to be a Hancock Park type lady. Do you want to be my sister-in-law? Blah, blah, blah. So that's how that.
Wow.
So sometimes you just have to go in. You have to do it. Even if you think it's too small at the time, you just. And then she gave me some really good advice. She said, don't say offer only, because that makes people think that you just don't like the part. That right. And that you don't like us.
Yeah.
Instead, you know, think of a different way to do it.
So she was an ally, honest, and a friend, you know?
She's an ally to all actors, I would say.
Thank you for sharing that story. I really appreciate that. Yeah. That's incredible. And
so I was busy on that, Better Things, and the other stuff.
So you were shooting that in the West Coast. You had already done the London play?
Well, we shot some of Better Things in London. So when they were. Yeah. And then I was literally booked on Sweet Tooth the day before they asked me about Three Body Problem. And we had closed the deal the day that I met with Dan and David and Alex. So, you know, David's like, well, can't you you're.
Because you've got Sweet Tooth coming out season 3, right?
Yes. And that's quite delicious and quite different from this character.
Also Netflix too, right?
Also Netflix. Yeah. And it's a part that could be anybody. So you have to just do the work and then hopefully, you know, just count on if you put your head down, do the work, that people will find you. I would say if you can go on those, you know, the backstage, do, you know, short films, do plays, even if five people see it. Honestly, the play that I was doing when the casting director found me for A Thousand Pieces of Gold, which was really one of my first, it was the first indie movie with Chris Cooper, who wasn't Chris Cooper yet.
Oh, I love Chris Cooper.
He was almost Chris Cooper already because he'd already done Meituan. But that came about from doing a tiny play in Taper 2, which is their other theater. And it was really small. I don't even know how many seats it was, but it was small.
Black box almost, or?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Oh, the best. So, yeah.
And one of the actors was friends with the casting person of that, Laura Kennedy, and she cast me in my first movie. So I think she's like, she's a big casting director now, but at the time, that's how that came about, was from doing that small play. So you just keep working. That's, my husband's an actor, and he always says, like, sometimes I'll say, oh, I don't, because I know once I start working on something, everything else falls. And I work so hard that everything else falls by the wayside.
Yeah.
So I always resist at first. And sometimes when I say to my husband, oh, but then I can't do this or that, I can't go to that thing, my husband will say, you're an actor, go act. Plumbers fix pipes.
Yeah.
Actors have to act. You have to do it in order to stay.
Thank you for your kindness and your insights. And, you know, on behalf of my audience, it's really commendable. And thank you for, it's tough right now for us, I'm sure you can imagine.
Well, and
but to bring hope, you know, because this show, you know, really does echo on so many different things of humanity and the world being in trouble, which is not unlike our own current actual existence. So you get, the casting team finds out about this. Is it for originally the same character that you had for Dan and David for Three Body Problems?
Oh, for Three Body
Problems? Yeah, so let me circle this back.
So different. David and Dan, when they first told me the story, and then David said, so I have to ask you, how do you feel about the aging up process? And he said it to me like he expected me to say, oh, horrors. But instead I was like, oh my God, I have been waiting for this my whole life.
Yeah.
And he's like, really? I said, oh my God, you don't realize. I feel like I was always a character actor, but I kept getting asked to do things that weren't character-y. And, you know, I loved it. I, you know, except for what it did to my hair and my skin. But other than that, I just, you know, it's delicious to be able to play somebody so far from yourself.
Yeah.
It was really fun. I mean, I have been able to play, I think when I was in the Soderbergh, that was as far from myself as could be. But that one, I still had to look good, right?
Yeah.
This one, I got to, you know, elastic pants, flat shoes, and gray hair. And like, even if I ate something gross the night before, the next day, it helped them. I even got a sty at one point, and that helped them.
Wow. That's amazing. And so then I'm curious for you, you know, at this point, they came to you with an offer for Yi, for the character?
Well, I met them first. And we had like a 45 minute meeting. I think I'm the one who ended it because they're just, I can't express the extent to which they are great with actors. I mean, I think, you know, David's married to an actor, so I guess, you know, actress. So he knows she's a wonderful actress, Amanda Peet. So he, you know, he understands how we tick, and they're just, it's almost like they form this community theater company. You know, we go out to meals. They're, they probably know more about me than, they probably know too much about me. No, I'm going through the list. Yeah, they know too much about
me. So there's a real shorthand there with you guys. You really trusted them.
Yeah. Oh, I trust them so much. And they're on the set every second. So, I mean, they have these chairs. At some point I need to post, I have some photos of them like laying in the chair, watching the screen, like late at night, they've got a blanket up. They're there every second. So sometimes they give a note and it's, you're not quite sure what they mean about it. Like they, the way they talk about it is maybe in the external, but then you realize when you take their note, oh, that fed something. You know what I mean?
Totally.
So they're really, really, and to have the writers on set is really helpful as well.
Such a gift. And did you know how long of a commitment was it? Because the production looks second to none. I mean, it's like
everybody else was on it for a year. But because I had so many other things, I mean, I had other things stacked up, including my daughter's graduation.
And congratulations.
Thank you. But I did say to David in the meeting, I said, well, he said, well, can you get out of the other thing? I said, no, because once a deal's closed, I don't want to do that to them. And I said, also, they actually made room in their schedule for me to go to my daughter's graduation. He said, we'll do that. And I was like, are you sure? And he said, yeah, we'll do that. And it turned out, and they talked about it while I was there, and it turned out that that's when the last scene is shot on the mountaintop.
The final one with Tatiana.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was shot in Spain, and that was supposed to have been shot like 3 months earlier, but they postponed everything. So it was literally my daughter's graduation. Then I hopped on a plane to Spain and went to the top of the mountain and filmed that first. So they really, and they worked my real life into their schedule. And it was a condensed schedule of 3 months.
Okay. Wow. That's amazing. And for such a weighted character, I mean, what was that an intense process for you to jump around with both life, another production, and then go into this heavy existential, buoyant yet dark character? I mean, you're so amazing in this show and you root for her, but then you're kind of mad and it's such a complicated character to play. I mean, how did you attempt to begin to humanize her?
Well, I think we have to do that even when I've played murderers, you know. I guess she is a murderer too. But even you have to, for example, like when I did Laundromat, I really did a lot of research on the woman, and because it's based on a real life woman, even though they changed the names, and I saw her background and I realized what led up to that. And same thing with Three Body Problem. She was isolated and her world was falling apart. And that's what leads to a lot of her actions. And she screwed up as a mom. You know, there are a lot of things there, a lot of nuggets that you can, if you have empathy. I mean, I think
of course,
the most important thing is, don't you think empathy is the most important thing for an actor? And if you don't have that, it's really,
I could argue for even humans right now, it's what we need the most. It's why I feel like there's so much division, but you know, I mean,
don't get me started.
Yeah, I won't. But so then, you know, tapping into that, then did you, obviously with this source material, did Dan and Dave give you the books or did you go straight to the scripts?
I went straight to the scripts, but they had a Chinese coach for me, you know, just to talk about a little bit of the Chinese accent, but I had great dialogue coaches to help meld an English accent, get the English accent back that I'd gotten when I did theater there, get that back and then tinge it with a little bit of Chinese because they were the same dialogue coaches as on Mulan.
Your career really keeps coming full circle. It's amazing.
You know what? Yeah. You realize this business is very small. So when you work, you really have to be aware that you cannot be badly behaved because I've seen it happen with some young actors where they think they're like a big shot too soon. And at some point they aren't able to keep their feet on the ground. And it, you know, there's a backlash if you're unpleasant.
Starting to believe their own publicity. It's a real problem. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice way to do it. And there's, if you have to stand up for yourself, there's a good way to do it. And there's an improper way to do it. And, you know, you ideally choose the proper way, which understands that every person on a set has their job and you are helping them and they are helping you. There's no one's more important than another person. And this shoot, especially Three Body Problem, had, you know, an immense artistic crew. And
I was going to say, you've been on a lot of sets. I mean, talk to me just about the sheer production scale on Three Body Problem. I mean, have you been, I know you've been on a lot of sets, but have you seen something like this before? Because it's rare in a show where you can just feel the scale of it. It's so astounding.
It is. I don't know if I've been on something with this kind of expectation. I did a movie called What Dreams May Come with Robin.
Yeah.
And that one, at that time, the scale was huge. But now I would say that, yeah, is this the biggest? This is probably currently the recently, this is the most big budget thing. I don't think about that, though.
I don't think you can. I think it would paralyze anyone, you know?
Yeah. I don't think about the future. I don't think about when it comes out. Every time somebody says it, I'm like, really? Even Joy Luck Club, people were saying, oh my God, this is, and I was like, you think?
Oh man, you're so humble and kind. It's so nice. Yeah.
You know, you just do it because you like to act. You don't really, you try not, that would be my other advice to young actors, is try not to think of the end result, because then that affects your work. You really have to just go through the process and do the work for the work itself rather than for the end result. Easy for me to say, because I started at a time that was easier for actors. But as you know, now you just have to be, I guess you have to be more flexible. But the advantage for young actors now is you have so many platforms you can put yourself on that really elevates you. I'm, you know, look at someone like Maya Erskine. That led to, she did a YouTube thing, and that led to Pen 15, which led to, you know, if you have the talent, use it, put yourself out there, you know?
Yeah, I think we live in a time now where you can't just solely act anymore. You have to act and, you know, write, produce, you know, and it's a lot of things. And
like, but you, I think, did.
Yeah, I'm, you know, certainly trying the best I can to my abilities. And thank you for saying that. And I'm really curious, you know, for you as someone who's been in the business for a long time and has seen the changes of, like, you know, peak TV and things like that. Now, do you feel post strike that the landscape now, that there, a show like this Three Body Problem gives me hope, because this is a show that it's about humans, it's about humanity, even though it's, you know, science fiction, it's so grounded in reality that it's almost, it makes the show almost terrifying to a degree, because the believability is so tangible.
You just expressed it in the best possible way. I wish I'd written down your words, because
that's so kind.
It's not just sci-fi. That's what I keep trying to tell people. That story between, you know, Will and Jin, Will played by Alex Sharp.
Yeah.
Jin is Jess Hong. That storyline just kills me, you know.
It broke my heart.
Right? Sometimes I just see a photo and hear the music and I'm gone.
Yeah. Because,
I mean, they really captured, and then, you know, Saul, that last scene between Saul, Jovan Adepo, and Alex, that scene was so, they didn't play into the a soppiness. They tried to go against it, which made it more heart-wrenching.
Totally. It's not about them crying. It's they make you cry by them not, you know.
They're trying so hard to, like, lift it and make a joke. And, yeah, they were just – that was, to me, really an acting lesson, watching the two of them in that scene was, you know, it's that delicious.
And I feel like so much of we as artists in general, but it's like actors especially, we need great writing. And when you read these scripts, did you really know, like, did you see the story so clear in your head that this was an I mean, I know it was taken from a novel, but obviously Dan and Dave brought it to the West and brought some truth of the original and formed some new things. I mean, they're incredible with what they did. When you read this, what was that experience like leading the scripts for the first time?
They're amazing writers. So I hadn't read the book. The Chinese coach told me once we were in it, he said, you really should read the books. I read the books, but then that are wonderful. They're wonderful. But the fact is they have humanized it more. Their writing is, pretty amazing. I mean, it's amazing.
Obviously. It's a home run. I mean, they're incredible. I have so much respect for what they
do. And they're on the set. So if something isn't working, they come on and they say, okay, let's move this line here. Let's do that. You know, they're always there. So you're never worried that you're going to get a note 3 months later when it's too late to do anything. You know, Dan helped to build my walk my first day, because he was like, I mean, if not for him I feel like there are certain elements it might have been a fuck up. Oops.
You can say, please.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I still remember him like teasing. They're really great. It's so easy to have a relationship with them, you know?
Yeah.
I'm fine when somebody makes fun of something I do. And I think Dan said something like, I was a little like the first time I get out of the car, the very first shot, and I'm trying to walk up a mountain like an old lady walks up a mountain. And he's like, it was a little like Charlie Chaplin, and he did a whole thing of it made me laugh so hard. And then Jeremy, we all kind of gathered together, and Jeremy was saying, Jeremy Podeswa, who's so great with actors as well. Oh, what a gift. And he said, I've been watching like people in their 70s and even 80s, but mainly people in their 70s, and some just walk like we do. They're very vibrant. And he came in and said that after we'd shot the mountain scene, because by the mountain scene, she's kind of worn down a little bit.
Yeah.
But that still played in my head, like it gave me a little more leeway, you know? So they really did. They guide everyone's performance. Everyone, like accomplished. They're really... doesn't get better than that.
That's so wonderful.
I love them.
And what's it like having out there in the world now? I mean, it's everyone is watching it. Everyone is obsessed by it. You know, I mean, it's
are they?
It's such a powerful piece. And I mean, I not that Dan and Dave ever had anything to prove, but they just home run again. And it's just such an exceptional piece. But all of you guys, it really is a theater company. I mean, there's no other actor or actresses in the world that could have brought the truth the way you guys did, because these characters feel so real and three-dimensional. And I do too, even though I'm not in this, hate the word sci-fi, because it does an injustice to sometimes what people associate with that world. This is so beautiful and tangible.
Like the girl who needs the mother, Marlo, is looking for the mother. You know, I mean, there's so many underpinnings that are delicious for people who aren't sci-fi people. So you expressed it perfectly. Thank you.
Yeah. And so then what's next for you? I know you have the play at Atlantic, and then you have Sweet Tooth coming out.
Yeah, Sweet Tooth is coming out. I don't think I'm allowed to say the date, but it's coming out very soon. And that character's really fun too.
Oh, amazing.
That was a little more chewing the scenery type thing, but it was fun. It exercised a different muscle, let's put it that way.
That's so beautiful.
And I need to not always be playing baddies. I need a little break from that. I think I think I should probably not, but I don't see you as a baddie, so that's
fine. No, you're an amazing actress, and that's why I'm so excited to have had you on today, because it means, I mean, to have your kind of career is something, I mean, anyone could hope for 5% of. And
I'm a workman. You know what I mean? I'm like the guy who comes in and fixes the pipes. And, so it hasn't always been leads. It's often, where I just come in. I mean, you have to do those roles. You know this. You have to go do those roles where you go in and you, give the expository stuff. I've done so much of that where it feels like a memorization test versus you're just pushing the storyline forward. But through those roles, don't you think that you learn like all the technical stuff? You get to watch the lead actors and you learn how
those procedurals particularly are such a machine, you know, I mean, SVU was my first thing, and the methodical of, you know, the detective this and that. And to the audience, I think it seems so natural, but it's so not as an actor.
It isn't.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, Vincent D'Onofrio, is that SVU?
Yeah. No, he was on the original Law & Order. He works out at my gym. I just saw
him. He does? Yeah. Okay, so you can tell him. I remember hearing his story on set because I did one of those. And I heard that he is famous for hitting his mark every time. Like he has a gift where he can just walk. And I really admire that. That's not an easy gift. Your peripheral vision plus doing the lines and being able to hit your toe right at that mark, not easy. And he hits it every time in a way that, like, if there's three marks set up, he can do this. This, I mean, and every mark is, so he's got the technical as well as, you know, the artistic end of it too. That's quite amazing.
It is. And for the actors listening, I ask every actor on this, you know, and specifically with you, you know, any advice you might have out there to this next generation. I know you've given a lot of great ones, but, you know, as someone who has auditioned for a lot of guest stars, you know, and now a lot of, you know, my audience auditions for co-stars. And when you don't have these, you know, longer, you know, reoccurring type roles, and you have to do something and make something short, pretty solid, any words of wisdom you might have, you know, for the auditioning?
Yes, because sometimes I do see this happening. Oh, for auditioning or for both?
For anything, any advice you might have?
I say just know when you're auditioning, always remember, it's so cliche, but always remember they need you to be the person for the job. And think of each audition as work, that you're doing it for you. You're not doing it to get the job because they can smell that a mile away. I know it sounds so crazy, but you don't want to seem like you need that job.
The desperation can kill.
It really can. So that's part of it. And on the set too. I've seen people who have maybe the co-star role try and make so much out of it. And it's just, they make, you know, mincemeat out of it. Just go in, do your job, fulfill your role, and don't let your ego, don't think, oh, I need this to be a big, just do it to be on the set, watch what's going on. I mean, I've done some teensy part. I did this thing where I only had one line, and I remember I really wanted to make a mark, and then I kept forgetting that line. Wow. You know, it just kind of puts your head in the wrong space. So you just have to, like, remind yourself, I'm here to serve the work. And, you know, just believe, I know it sounds so crazy, but you have to really believe that you're the best person to do this, you know, once you're on the set. And when you're auditioning, just think they'd be lucky to get me. That's what my husband and I say to each other before we leave to go do something. My husband always says, they'd be lucky to get you. And I always say it to him too.
Yeah, they would be. And that's amazing. And do you think or have any aspirations to maybe one day start a production company?
Oh, I'm so disorganized. I can't. That poor production company. I'd have to pair up with somebody who's really, I have a lot of ideas in my head, but I don't, the organizational skills are not primo.
Yeah.
So
I believe in you, and I think you could, but I understand I'm not the most organized myself, so I'm certainly not one to speak.
I mean, listen, I'm the one who said, oh, I don't care, 45 minutes an hour, I don't
care. But I think we're having a great time.
Decent place else, but I can't remember where.
No, it's okay, we're ending here. And then, you know, for the audience listening, with the Atlantic play, how long does that run?
Atlantic Theater? I don't know. We're doing it in conjunction. I think if they go on Atlantic Theater's website, the play is called What Became of Us.
What Became of Us?
Yeah, I think I should check to make sure I don't have the what became of us. And let me just look. What became of us? And, you know, if they look that up on the Atlantic Theater website, it has all the dates. And yes, come on down.
I'll be there.
As long as I don't screw it up. Honestly, before every job, fear really. Okay, one last piece of advice. And that's fear is fuel. Just remember that. It's okay if you're afraid. I'm terrified right now. But fear is fuel. Just remind yourself, if ever you're scared to do something or you're on a set and you feel that fear can fuel you. So use it, you know?
Thank you for all your wisdom and giving back and taking some time and carving out. And thank you for sharing all of the truths that you've learned and every advice you've had for all the actors out there. It means the world and it means so much to me.
Thank you for doing this. This is so generous of you to do this for your fellow actors. And I'm rooting for everyone out there because I really want everybody to have their opportunity to use their talent to the best of their ability. And I hate to think of people being squelched by, you know, all the money making.
Late stage capitalism, C-suite. But you've been an immense beacon of hope and positivity. And this podcast has been exceptional. And I'm really not just saying that. I'm really grateful for your time. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in this play and Sweet Tooth season 3. So please,
come
back. And this is so much fun. And I hope you have a great day with your family. Okay.
I'll see you in New York.
All right. I'll see you in New York. So much love.
Come on down.
Bye. Bye.
If you like the show, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening.